Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking about the State of the Union Address. In fact, we're going to bring you the State of the Union Address as soon as the president gets to the podium and they do all their applauding, their, you know, the obligatory stuff that has to happen. Where, you know, the first word always elicits a response, a standing ovation and all that. But we're going to bring you the speech. We're going to listen to it. And then afterwards, we're going to do a little critique. Abe Amoros from the Laborers International Union. Liuna is going to be here to talk a little bit about what he heard. Also, Dr. Stephen Herzenberg from the Keystone Research Center going to be here to talk about what he heard. And then, of course, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to talk about what you heard, because I think this is a big speech. I don't think there are going to be any groundbreaking things. I do think we're going to hear some very conciliatory tones. The massive olive branch reaching across the aisle. We're going to hear a lot of pandering. We're going to hear a lot of nice soft words. At the end of it, it's where do we go from here? How do we take back the discussion? How do we begin to head in what I think is the right direction? I'm not thrilled with the right word, sprinting, if you will, to the extreme right that we're seeing of the political movement. But again, this is what happened when Bill Clinton became president and saw his first thumping in the midterm. He did move really decidedly to the right. And we did as a country move a little bit. So we're waiting for the president to make his way down, shaking hands. I hope Michelle Bachmann doesn't accost him in the aisle, as she has been known to do in the past. One of the interesting thing though, you know, Michelle's going to give her alternative, State of the Union address on behalf of the Tea Party. And I found it interesting that her own state, the Tea Party movement in her own state, had said, they issued a response, said, please call Michelle Bachmann's office and tell her that she does not speak for the Tea Party. Michelle has announced she will be giving the Tea Party response to the President's State of the Union Address. The Tea Party Patriots Organization is a grassroots organization. One person has no right to speak for the whole organization. Oh, silly, silly people. You actually think that the people who are running this whole thing care what you think. They have put crazy out in front because they like that. You know, they like demeaning you. But you still identify with them, so good for you. Those were the Tea Party Patriots of the Twin Cities. So it will be interesting as we move along. I'm expecting, and I'll be honest with you right now, I'm expecting to be kind of upset at the end of this. I'm expecting to be furious at the end of this with the tones that I think are coming. this pandering to big business. On one hand, I understand it. You're going to have to pander to the people who control the country. But on the other hand, this is that moment where we're going to decide which direction we go as a country. Are we going to continue down the same path that has gotten us into this mess? Or are we going to move in a direction that's going to have a broad-based recovery for the people, for those of us who actually work for a living? And I don't know what you think, Jake, but I'll tell you right now what I'm expecting is the big olive branch across the aisle, the big, oh, we heard you, America, we heard loud and clear. So it's going to be interesting.
Well, some politicals are saying they believe, which I think we would both think is a good thing, he's going to try to get Congress to allocate money to plow back into the economy. A stimulus, another stimulus, if you will. Now, the bad thing is there's some politicals that also think he's going to try, for lack of a better word, pay as you go. Now, where do you get the money? I'm not so sure some of those things that he's going to say in that vein are going to please us. So, I all I can do is at this point wait and see. But I think you're right. I think this could be a slight turning of his political philosophy. But let's give him a chance. Let's be fair to the president and see what comes down.
Yeah, well, you know, as the president's making his way to the podium, doing the whole shaking hands and hugs and all of that, you got Eric Cantor right behind him with the big cheesy grin on his face. I look at this, and every time I see this kind of stuff,
what a spectacle!
That's really what it is.
It's a show.
I mean, these are people who would stab him in the back if they had the chance, and you know, with the big smile, the big cheese eating grin, walking down with him, I do know that Senator Casey has taken the Wall Street Senator Pat Toomey to the event. They're going to be sitting next to each other. In fact, there's Michelle Bachmann shaking hands with the president, it looks like. Yeah? Is that her?
No, that's not her.
Yeah.
No.
That is. It kind of looks like her.
No, I don't think it was.
No, it's not her? Okay. Well, there's Barney. Is that Barney Frank?
No.
Wow, I'm
You need
over
to put
two.
Your spectacles on, right?
For two already. But no, I mean, the great thing about this is we're going to hear the speech, and then we're going to go from there and talk about where we're going to go from here as he makes his way to the podium. And, you know, again, I think some of the things that we need to be focusing on: investment, building our infrastructure, energy, technology, reinvesting in the country, the innovation that has made this country great. And he's going to talk about that. My problem is we've rewarded companies to go elsewhere and take that innovation with them. We've given them the tax breaks. We've given them the ability to go somewhere else and do the things that they used to do here because we used to mandate it. And that's my problem with all this. And I'm sure, I'm almost positive we're going to be talking about the free trade agreements. I'm sure that he's probably going to bring up the South Korean thing. Because, you know, we need to have more of the free trade that got us into the mess we're into now, which is one of my big knocks right now. I think he's bought on to the free trade train. I'm kind of frustrated with that. But we will see. It looks like he's taking the podium. Everybody's doing the whole, no, not yet. There he is, still shaking hands with the Supreme Court justices that showed up. Scalia not there. It doesn't look like Alito is there. You remember last time Alito shook his head, angrily when the president talked about the Citizens United case, which basically turned out to be exactly what the president said, if you remember last year's State of the Union address. It basically opened the floodgates and allowed corporations to spend unlimited amounts of money doing what they've done. So, you know, I'm looking at the Supreme Court justices there going, well, you know, no Scalia, no Alito, it looks like, but Roberts was there. You see the very plastic hair of Chief Justice John Roberts. So, again, you know, I'm waiting anxiously, you know, like any of these speeches, because I am a political junkie. I love this stuff, and I hope you do too, and I hope you'll call in and talk to us about what you hear, because I'm curious, maybe you hear something different than I'm going to hear. Maybe you're going to hear something different than Our two guests are going to hear when we talk about it afterwards. I'm interested to see who he pulls out of the crowd, what priorities he puts forth. He has delivered a copy of the speech to the Speaker of the House and, of course, the head of the Senate, or the Vice President as well. So we're just about ready to go. They're still doing the clapping and the shaking hands and all that. He's waving to Michelle. Very nice. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm excited. We'll get to this here any second now as they get to the talking. Again, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We are interested in your thoughts, and we'll be tweeting. So that'll be good too.
Privilege and distinct honor.
So here we go.
Of presenting the President of the United States.
And of course, now we're gonna have a round of applause. Everybody stands. Shakes hands. Very nice. Very nice man. All right, get to it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Everybody, please have a seat. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, distinguished guests, and fellow Americans. Tonight I want to begin by congratulating the men and women of the 112th Congress, as well as your new Speaker, John Boehner. And as we mark this occasion, we're also mindful of the empty chair in this chamber, and we pray for the health of our colleague and our friend, Gabby Giffords. It's no secret that those of us here tonight have had our differences over the last 2 years. The debates have been contentious. We have fought fiercely for our beliefs. And that's a good thing. That's what a robust democracy demands. That's what helps set us apart as a nation. But there's a reason the tragedy in Tucson gave us pause. Amid all the noise and passion and rancor of our public debate, Tucson reminded us that no matter who we are or where we come from, each of us is a part of something greater, something more consequential than party or political preference. We are part of the American family. We believe that in a country where every race and faith and point of view can be found, we are still bound together as one people, that we share common hopes and a common creed, that the dreams of a little girl in Tucson are not so different than those of our own children, that they all deserve the chance to be fulfilled. That, too, is what sets us apart as a nation. Now, by itself, this simple recognition won't usher in a new era of cooperation. What comes of this moment is up to us. What comes of this moment will be determined not by whether we can sit together tonight, but whether we can work together tomorrow. I believe we can, and I believe we must. That's what the people who sent us here expect of us. With their votes, they've determined that governing will now be a shared responsibility between parties. New laws will only pass with support from Democrats and Republicans. We will move forward together, or not at all, for the challenges we face are bigger than party and bigger than politics. At stake right now is not who wins the next election. After all, we just had an election. At stake is whether new jobs and industries take root in this country or somewhere else. It's whether the hard work and industry of our people is rewarded. It's whether we sustain the leadership that has made America not just a place on a map, but the light to the world. Now, we are poised for progress. 2 years after the worst recession most of us have ever known, the stock market has come roaring back. Corporate profits are up. The economy is growing again. But we have never measured progress by these yardsticks alone. We measure progress by the success of our people, by the jobs they can find and the quality of life those jobs offer, by the prospects of a small business owner who dreams of turning a good idea into a thriving enterprise, by the opportunities for a better life that we pass on to our children. That's the project the American people want us to work on. Together. Now, we did that in December. Thanks to the tax cuts we passed, Americans' paychecks are a little bigger today. Every business can write off the full cost of new investments that they make this year. And these steps, taken by Democrats and Republicans, will grow the economy and add to the more than 1 million private sector jobs created last year. But we have to do more. These steps we've taken over the last 2 years may have broken the back of this recession. But to win the future, we'll need to take on challenges that have been decades in the making. Many people watching tonight can probably remember a time when finding a good job meant showing up at a nearby factory or a business downtown. You didn't always need a degree, and your competition was pretty much limited to your neighbors. If you worked hard, chances are you'd have a job for life, with a decent paycheck and good benefit, and the occasional promotion. Maybe you'd even have the pride of seeing your kids work at the same company. That world has changed. And for many, the change has been painful. I've seen it in the shuttered windows of once booming factories, in the vacant storefronts on once busy main streets. I've heard it in the frustrations of Americans who've seen their paychecks dwindle or their jobs disappear. Proud men and women who feel like the rules have been changed in the middle of the game. They're right. The rules have changed. In a single generation, revolutions in technology have transformed the way we live, work, and do business. Steel mills that once needed 1,000 workers can now do the same work with 100. Today, just about any company can set up shop, hire workers, and sell their products wherever there's an internet connection. Meanwhile, nations like China and India realized that with some changes of their own, they could compete in this new world. And so they started educating their children earlier and longer, with greater emphasis on math and science. They're investing in research and new technologies. Just recently, China became the home to the world's largest private solar research facility and the world's fastest computer. So, yes, the world has changed. The competition for jobs is real. But this shouldn't discourage us. It should challenge us. Remember, for all the hits we've taken these last few years, for all the naysayers predicting our decline, America still has the largest, most prosperous economy in the world. No workers are more productive than ours. No country has more successful companies or grants more patents to inventors and entrepreneurs. We're the home to the world's best colleges and universities, where more students come to study than any place on earth. What's more, we are the first nation to be founded for the sake of an idea. The idea that each of us deserves the chance to shape our own destiny. That's why centuries of pioneers and immigrants have risked everything to come here. That's why our students don't just memorize equations, but answer questions like, what do you think of that idea? What would you change about the world? What do you want to be when you grow up? The future is ours to win. But to get there, we can't just stand still. As Robert Kennedy told us, the future is not a gift. It is an achievement. Sustaining the American dream has never been about standing pat. It has required each generation to sacrifice and struggle and meet the demands of a new age. And now it's our turn. We know what it takes to compete for the jobs and industries of our time. We need to out-innovate, out-educate, and out-build the rest of the world. We have to make America the best place on earth to do business. We need to take responsibility for our deficit and reform our government. That's how our people will prosper. That's how we'll win the future. And tonight I'd like to talk about how we get there. The first step in winning the future is encouraging American innovation. None of us can predict with certainty what the next big industry will be or where the new jobs will come from. 30 years ago, we couldn't know that something called the Internet would lead to an economic revolution. What we can do, what America does better than anyone else, is spark the creativity and imagination of our people. We're the nation that put cars in driveways and computers in offices, the nation of Edison and the Wright brothers, of Google and Facebook. In America, innovation doesn't just change our lives, it is how we make our living. Our free enterprise system is what drives innovation. But because it's not always profitable for companies to invest in basic research, through our history, our government has provided cutting-edge scientists and inventors with the support that they need. That's what planted the seeds for the Internet. That's what helped make possible things like computer chips and GPS. Just think of all the good jobs, from manufacturing to retail, that have come from these breakthroughs. A half a century ago, when the Soviets beat us into space with the launch of a satellite called Sputnik, we had no idea how we would beat them to the moon. The science wasn't even there yet. NASA didn't exist. But after investing in better research and education, we didn't just surpass the Soviets. We unleashed a wave of innovation that created new industries and millions of new jobs. This is our generation's Sputnik moment. 2 years ago, I said that we needed to reach a level of research and development we haven't seen since the height of the space race. And in a few weeks, I will be sending a budget to Congress that helps us meet that goal. We'll invest in biomedical research, information technology, and especially clean energy technology. An investment that will strengthen our security, protect our planet, and create countless new jobs for our people. Already we're seeing the promise of renewable energy. Robert and Gary Allen are brothers who run a small Michigan roofing company. After September 11th, they volunteered their best roofers to help repair the Pentagon. But half of their factory went unused, and the recession hit them hard. Today, with the help of a government loan, that empty space is being used to manufacture solar shingles that are being sold all across the country. In Robert's words, we reinvented ourselves. That's what Americans have done for over 200 years. Reinvented ourselves. And to spur on more success stories like the Allen brothers, we've begun to reinvent our energy policy. We're not just handing out money. We're issuing a challenge. We're telling America's scientists and engineers that if they assemble teams of the best minds in their fields and focus on the hardest problems in clean energy, we'll fund the Apollo projects of our time. At the California Institute of Technology, they're developing a way to turn sunlight and water into fuel for our cars. At Oak Ridge National Laboratory, they're using supercomputers to get a lot more power out of our nuclear facilities. With more research and incentives, we can break our dependence on oil with biofuels and become the first country to have 1 million electric vehicles on the road by 2015. We need to get behind this innovation. And to help pay for it, I'm asking Congress to eliminate the billions in taxpayer dollars we currently give to oil companies. I don't know if you've noticed, but they're doing just fine on their own. So instead of subsidizing yesterday's energy, let's invest in tomorrow's. Now, clean energy breakthroughs will only translate into clean energy jobs if businesses know there will be a market for what they're selling. So tonight, I challenge you to join me in setting a new goal. By 2035, 80% of America's electricity will come from clean energy sources. Some folks want wind and solar. Others want nuclear, clean coal, and natural gas. To meet this goal, we will need them all. And I urge Democrats and Republicans to work together to make it happen. Now, maintaining our leadership in research and technology is crucial to America's success. But if we want to win the future, if we want innovation to produce jobs in America and not overseas, then we also have to win the race to educate our kids. Think about it. Over the next 10 years, nearly half of all new jobs will require education that goes beyond a high school education. And yet, as many as a quarter of our students aren't even finishing high school. The quality of our math and science education lags behind many other nations. America's fallen to ninth in the proportion of young people with a college degree. And so the question is whether all of us, as citizens and as parents, are willing to do what's necessary to give every child a chance to succeed. That responsibility begins not in our classrooms, but in our homes and communities. It's family that first instills the love of learning in a child. Only parents can make sure the TV is turned off and homework gets done. We need to teach our kids that it's not just the winner of the Super Bowl who deserves to be celebrated, but the winner of the science fair. We need to teach them that success is not a function of fame or PR, but of hard work and discipline. Our schools share this responsibility. When a child walks into a classroom, it should be a place of high expectations and high performance. But too many schools don't meet this test. That's why instead of just pouring money into a system that's not working, we launched a competition called Race to the Top. To all 50 states, we said, if you show us the most innovative plans to improve teacher quality and student achievement, we'll show you the money. Race to the Top is the most meaningful reform of our public schools in a generation. For less than 1% of what we spend on education each year, it has led over 40 states to raise their standards for teaching and learning. And these standards were developed, by the way, not by Washington, but by Republican and Democratic governors throughout the country. And Race to the Top should be the approach we follow this year as we replace No Child Left Behind with a law that's more flexible and focused on what's best for our kids. You see, we know what's possible from our children when reform isn't just a top-down mandate, but the work of local teachers and principals, school boards and communities. Take a school like Bruce Randolph in Denver. 3 years ago, it was rated one of the worst schools in Colorado, located on turf between two rival gangs. But last May, 97% of the seniors received their diploma. Most will be the first in their families to go to college. And after the first year of the school's transformation, the principal who made it possible wiped away tears when a student said, "Thank you, Miss Waters, for showing that we are smart and we can make it." That's what good schools can do. And we want good schools all across the country. Let's also remember that after parents, the biggest impact on a child's success comes from the man or woman at the front of the classroom. In South Korea, teachers are known as nation builders. Here in America, it's time we treated the people who educate our children with the same level of respect. We want to reward good teachers and stop making excuses for bad ones. And over the next 10 years, with so many baby boomers retiring from our classrooms, we want to prepare 100,000 new teachers in the fields of science and technology and engineering and math. In fact, every young person listening tonight who's contemplating their career choice, if you want to make a difference in the life of our nation, if you want to make a difference in the life of a child, become a teacher. Your country needs you. Of course, the education race doesn't end with a high school diploma. To compete, higher education must be within the reach of every American. That's why we've ended the unwarranted taxpayer subsidies that went to banks and used the savings to make college affordable for millions of students. And this year, I asked Congress to go further and make permanent our tuition tax credit worth $10,000 for 4 years of college. It's the right thing to do. Because people need to be able to train for new jobs and careers in today's fast-changing economy, we're also revitalizing America's community colleges. Last month, I saw the promise of these schools at Forsyth Tech in North Carolina. Many of the students there used to work in the surrounding factories that have since left town. One mother of two, a woman named Kathy Proctor, had worked in the furniture industry since she was 18 years old. And she told me she's earning her degree in biotechnology now at 55 years old. Not just because the furniture jobs are gone, but because she wants to inspire her children to pursue their dreams too. As Kathy said, I hope it tells them to never give up. If we take these steps, if we...
You know, that's a lot of the things we're talking about, education. And look, the education, something we need to be investing in. Absolutely agree. You know, especially talking about the college money that he's talking about, making it permanent for tuition tax credits for $10,000 for a four-year college and taking the money away from the bank. I absolutely agree with him on this. And, you know, as he's moving forward, you know, talking about this woman who, you know, went back to school, got her degree, started, you know, saying, look, I want to do this for my children. I know that feeling myself. Having been there and done the same thing, you know, went back to college later in my life to do the same thing. He goes on to say that, you know, we should be taking
college graduates in the world.
Let's go back to it.
Of their parents. They grew up as Americans and pledge allegiance to our flag, and yet they live every day with the threat of deportation. Others come here from abroad to study in our colleges and universities. But as soon as they obtain advanced degrees, we send them back home to compete against us. It makes no sense. Now, I strongly believe that we should take on once and for all
the immigration part of this. I've kind of agreed with, you know, you're saying, look, you know, the people that we're educating, they're leaving. They're going back to their country and they're doing good things at home. We want to keep those kind of folks. And I've said that about education a number of times. Look, you know, we need to be able to keep smart people. We need to be able to keep talented folks here to be able to.
Talented, responsible young people who could be staffing our research labs or starting a new business, who could be further enriching this nation. The third step in winning the future is rebuilding America. To attract new businesses to our shores, we need the fastest, most reliable ways to move people, goods, and information, from high-speed rail to high-speed internet. Our infrastructure used to be the best, but our lead has slipped. South Korean homes now have greater internet access than we do. Countries in Europe and Russia invest more in their roads and railways than we do. China's building faster trains and newer airports. Meanwhile, when our own engineers graded our nation's infrastructure, they gave us a D. We have to do better. America's the nation that built the Transcontinental Railroad, brought electricity to rural communities, constructed the interstate highway system. The jobs created by these projects didn't just come from laying down track or pavement. They came from businesses that opened near a town's new train station or the new off-ramp. So over the last 2 years, we've begun rebuilding for the 21st century. A project that has meant thousands of good jobs for the hard-hit construction industry. And tonight I'm proposing that we redouble those efforts. We'll put more Americans to work repairing crumbling roads and bridges. We'll make sure this is fully paid for, attract private investment, and pick projects based what's best for the economy. Not politicians. Within 25 years, our goal is to give 80% of Americans access to high-speed rail. This could allow you to go places in half the time it takes to travel by car. For some trips, it will be faster than flying, without the pat-down. As we speak, routes in California and the Midwest are already underway. Within the next 5 years, We'll make it possible for businesses to deploy the next generation of high-speed wireless coverage to 98% of all Americans. This isn't just about, this isn't about faster internet or fewer dropped calls. It's about connecting every part of America to the digital age. It's about a rural community in Iowa or Alabama where farmers and small business owners will be able to sell their products all over the world. It's about a firefighter who can download the design of a burning building onto a handheld device, a student who can take classes with a digital textbook, or a patient who can have face-to-face video chats with her doctor. All these investments in innovation, education, and infrastructure will make America a better place to do business and create jobs. But to help our companies compete, we also have to knock down barriers that stand in the way of their success. For example, over the years, a parade of lobbyists has rigged the tax code to benefit particular companies and industries. Those with accountants or lawyers to work the system can end up paying no taxes at all. But all the rest are hit with one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world. It makes no sense, and it has to change. So tonight I'm asking Democrats and Republicans to simplify the system. Get rid of the loopholes. Level the playing field. And use the savings to lower the corporate tax rate for the first time in 25 years without adding to our deficit. It can be done. To help businesses sell more products abroad, we set a goal of doubling our exports by 2014. Because the more we export, the more jobs we create here at home. Already our exports are up. Recently we signed agreements with India and China that will support more than 250,000 jobs here in the United States. And last month we finalized a trade agreement with South Korea that will support at least 70,000 American jobs. This agreement has unprecedented support from business and labor, Democrats and Republicans, and I ask this Congress to pass it as soon as possible. Now, before I took office, I made it clear that we would enforce our trade agreements and that I would only sign deals that keep faith with American workers and promote American jobs. That's what we did with Korea. And that's what I intend to do as we pursue agreements with Panama and Colombia and continue our Asia-Pacific and global trade talks. To reduce barriers to growth and investment, I've ordered a review of government regulations. When we find rules that put an unnecessary burden on businesses, we will fix them. But I will not hesitate to create or enforce common sense safeguards to protect the American people. That's what we've done in this country for more than a century. It's why our food is safe to eat, our water is safe to drink, and our air is safe to breathe. It's why we have speed limits and child labor laws. It's why last year we put in place consumer protections against hidden fees and penalties by credit card companies and new rules to prevent another financial crisis. And it's why we passed reform that finally prevents the health insurance industry from exploiting patients. Now, I have heard rumors that a few of you still have concerns about our new health care law. So let me be the first to say that anything can be improved. If you have ideas about how to improve this law by making care better or more affordable, I am eager to work with you. We can start right now by correcting a flaw in the legislation that has placed an unnecessary bookkeeping burden on small businesses. What I'm not willing to do is go back to the days when insurance companies could deny someone coverage because of a pre-existing condition. I'm not willing to tell James Howard, a brain cancer patient from Texas, that his treatment might not be covered. I'm not willing to tell Jim Hauser, a small businessman from Oregon, that he has to go back to paying $5,000 more to cover his employees. As we speak, this law is making prescription drugs cheaper for seniors and giving uninsured students a chance to stay on their parents' coverage. So I say to this chamber tonight, instead of refighting the battles of the last 2 years, let's fix what needs fixing and let's move forward. Now, the final critical step in winning the future is to make sure we aren't buried under a mountain of debt. We are living with a legacy of deficit spending that began almost a decade ago. And in the wake of the financial crisis, some of that was necessary to keep credit flowing, save jobs, and put money in people's pockets. But now that the worst of the recession is over, we have to confront the fact that our government spends more than it takes in. That is not sustainable. Every day, families sacrifice to live within their means. They deserve a government that does the same. So tonight, I am proposing that starting this year, we freeze annual domestic spending for the next 5 years. Now, this would reduce the deficit by more than $400 billion over the next decade and will bring discretionary spending to the lowest share of our economy since Dwight Eisenhower was president. This freeze will require painful cuts. Already, we've frozen the salaries of hardworking federal employees for the next 2 years. I propose cuts to things I care deeply about, like community action programs. The Secretary of Defense has also agreed to cut tens of billions of dollars in spending that he and his generals believe our military can do without. Now, I recognize that some in this chamber have already proposed deeper cuts, and I'm willing to eliminate whatever we can honestly afford to do without. But let's make sure that we're not doing it on the backs of our most vulnerable citizens. And let's make sure that what we're cutting is really excess weight. Cutting the deficit by gutting our investments in innovation and education is like lightening an overloaded airplane by removing its engine. It may make you feel like you're flying high at first, but it won't take long before you feel the impact. Now, most of the cuts and savings I proposed only address annual domestic spending, which represents a little more than 12% of our budget. To make further progress, we have to stop pretending that cutting this kind of spending alone will be enough. It won't. The bipartisan fiscal commission I created last year made this crystal clear. I don't agree with all their proposals, but they made important progress. And their conclusion is that the only way to tackle our deficit is to cut excessive spending wherever we find it. In domestic spending, defense spending, health care spending, and spending through tax breaks and loopholes. This means further reducing health care costs, including programs like Medicare and Medicaid, which are the single biggest contributor to our long-term deficit. The health insurance law we passed last year will slow these rising costs, which is part of the reason that nonpartisan economists have said that repealing the health care law would add $250 billion to our deficit. Still, I'm willing to look at other ideas to bring down costs, including one that Republicans suggested last year, medical malpractice reform to rein in frivolous lawsuits. To put us on solid ground, we should also find a bipartisan solution to strengthen Social Security for future generations. We must do it without putting at risk current retirees, the most vulnerable, or people with disabilities, without slashing benefits for future generations, and without subjecting Americans' guaranteed retirement income to the whims of the stock market. And if we truly care about our deficit, we simply can't afford a permanent extension of the tax cuts for the wealthiest 2% of Americans. Before we take money away from our schools or scholarships away from our students, we should ask millionaires to give up their tax break. It's not a matter of punishing their success. It's about promoting America's success. In fact, the best thing we could do on taxes for all Americans is to simplify the individual tax code. This will be a tough job, but members of both parties have expressed an interest in doing this, and I am prepared to join them. So now is the time to act. Now is the time for both sides and both houses of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, to forge a principled compromise that gets the job done. If we make the hard choices now to rein in our deficits, we can make the investments we need to win the future. Let me take this one step further. We shouldn't just give our people a government that's more affordable. We should give them a government that's more competent and more efficient. We can't win the future with a government of the past. We live and do business in the information age. But the last major reorganization of the government happened in the age of black and white TV. There are 12 different agencies that deal with exports. There are at least 5 different agencies that deal with housing policy. Then there's my favorite example. The Interior Department is in charge of salmon while they're in freshwater, but the Commerce Department handles them when they're in saltwater. I hear it gets even more complicated once they're smoked. Now, we've made great strides over the last 2 years in using technology and getting rid of waste. Veterans can now download their electronic medical records with a click of the mouse. We're selling acres of federal office space that hasn't been used in years, and we'll cut through red tape to get rid of more. But we need to think bigger. In the coming months, my administration will develop a proposal to merge consolidate, and reorganize the federal government in a way that best serves the goal of a more competitive America. I will submit that proposal to Congress for a vote, and we will push to get it passed. In the coming year, we'll also work to rebuild people's faith in the institution of government. Because you deserve to know exactly how and where your tax dollars are being spent, you'll be able to go to a website and get that information for the very first time in history. Because you deserve to know when your elected officials are meeting with lobbyists, I ask Congress to do what the White House has already done. Put that information online. And because the American people deserve to know that special interests aren't larding up legislation with pet projects, both parties in Congress should know this. If a bill comes to my desk with earmarks inside, I will veto it. I will veto it. The 21st century government that's open and competent, a government that lives within its means, an economy that's driven by new skills and new ideas. Our success in this new and changing world will require reform, responsibility, and innovation. It will also require us to approach that world with a new level of engagement in our foreign affairs. Just as jobs and businesses can now race across borders, so can new threats and new challenges. No single wall separates East and West. No one rival superpower is aligned against us. And so we must defeat determined enemies wherever they are and build coalitions that cut across lines of region and race and religion. And America's moral example must always shine for all who yearn for freedom and justice and dignity. And because we've begun this work, tonight we can say that American leadership has been renewed and America's standing has been restored. Look to Iraq, where nearly 100,000 of our brave men and women have left with their heads held high. American combat patrols have ended. Violence is down. And a new government has been formed. This year, our civilians will forge a lasting partnership with the Iraqi people while we finish the job of bringing our troops out of Iraq. America's commitment has been kept. The Iraq War is coming to an end. Of course, as we speak, al-Qaeda and their affiliates continue to plan attacks against us. Thanks to our intelligence and law enforcement professionals, we're disrupting plots and securing our cities and skies. And as extremists try to inspire acts of violence within our borders, we are responding with the strength of our communities, with respect for the rule of law, and with the conviction that American Muslims are a part of our American family. We've also taken the fight to al-Qaeda and their allies abroad. In Afghanistan, our troops have taken Taliban strongholds and trained Afghan security forces. Our purpose is clear. By preventing the Taliban from reestablishing a stranglehold over the Afghan people, we will deny al-Qaeda the safe haven that served as a launching pad for 9/11. Thanks to our heroic troops and civilians, fewer Afghans are under the control of the insurgency. There will be tough fighting ahead, and the Afghan government will need to deliver better governance. But we are strengthening the capacity of the Afghan people and building an enduring partnership with them. This year, we will work with nearly 50 countries to begin a transition to an Afghan lead. And this July, we will begin to bring our troops home.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
In Pakistan, Al-Qaeda's leadership is under more pressure than at any point since 2001. Their leaders and operatives are being removed from the battlefield. Their safe havens are shrinking. And we've sent a message from the Afghan border to the Arabian Peninsula to all parts of the globe. We will not relent, we will not waver, and we will defeat you. American leadership can also be seen in the effort to secure the worst weapons of war. Because Republicans and Democrats approved the New START treaty, far fewer nuclear weapons and launchers will be deployed. Because we rallied the world, nuclear materials are being locked down on every continent so they never fall into the hands of terrorists. Because of a diplomatic effort to insist that Iran meet its obligations, the Iranian government now faces tougher sanctions, tighter sanctions than ever before. And on the Korean Peninsula, we stand with our ally South Korea and insist that North Korea keeps its commitment to abandon nuclear weapons. This is just a part of how we're shaping a world that favors peace and prosperity. With our European allies, we revitalized NATO and increased our cooperation on everything from counterterrorism to missile defense. We've reset our relationship with Russia, strengthened Asian alliances, built new partnerships with nations like India. This March, I will travel to Brazil, Chile, and El Salvador to forge new alliances across the Americas. Around the globe, we're standing with those who take responsibility, helping farmers grow more food, supporting doctors who care for the sick, and combating the corruption that can rot a society and rob people of opportunity. Now, recent events have shown us that what sets us apart must not just be our power. It must also be the purpose behind it. In South Sudan, with our assistance, the people were finally able to vote for independence after years of war. Thousands lined up before dawn. People danced in the streets. One man who lost four of his brothers at war summed up the scene around him. "This was a battlefield for most of my life," he said. "Now we want to be free." And we saw that same desire to be free in Tunisia, where the will of the people proved more powerful than the writ of a dictator. And tonight, let us be clear, the United States of America stands with the people of Tunisia and supports the democratic aspirations of all people. We must never forget that the things we've struggled for and fought for live in the hearts of people everywhere. And we must always remember that the Americans who have borne the greatest burden in this struggle are the men and women who serve our country. Tonight, let us speak with one voice in reaffirming that our nation is united in support of our troops and their families. Let us serve them as well as they've served us by giving them the equipment they need, by providing them with the care and benefits that they have earned, and by enlisting our veterans in the great task of building our own nation. Our troops come from every corner of this country. They're black, white, Latino, Asian, Native American. They are Christian and Hindu, Jewish and Muslim. And yes, we know that some of them are gay. Starting this year, no American will be forbidden from serving the country they love because of who they love. And with that change, I call on all our college campuses to open their doors to our military recruiters and ROTC. It is time to leave behind the divisive battles of the past. It is time to move forward as one nation. We should have no illusions about the work ahead of us. Reforming our schools, changing the way we use energy, reducing our deficit. None of this will be easy. All of it will take time. And it will be harder because we will argue about everything. The costs, the details, the letter of every law. Of course, some countries don't have this problem. If the central government wants a railroad, they build a railroad, no matter how many homes get bulldozed. If they don't want a bad story in the newspaper, it doesn't get written. And yet, as contentious and frustrating and messy as our democracy can sometimes be, I know there isn't a person here who would trade places with any other nation on earth. Differences in policy, but we all believe in the rights enshrined in our Constitution. We may have different opinions, but we believe in the same promise that says, this is a place where you can make it if you try. We may have different backgrounds, but we believe in the same dream that says, this is a country where anything is possible, no matter who you are, no matter where you come from. That dream is why I can stand here before you tonight. That dream is why a working class kid from Scranton can sit behind me. That dream is why someone who began by sweeping the floors of his father's Cincinnati bar can preside as Speaker of the House in the greatest nation on earth. That dream, that American dream, is what drove the Allen brothers to reinvent their roofing company for a new era. It's what drove those students at Forsyth Tech to learn a new skill and work towards the future. And that dream is the story of a small business owner named Brandon Fisher. Brandon started a company in Berlin, Pennsylvania, that specializes in a new kind of drilling technology. And one day last summer, he saw the news that halfway across the world, 33 men were trapped in a Chilean mine, and no one knew how to save them. But Brandon thought his company could help, and so he designed a rescue that would come to be known as Plan B. His employees worked around the clock to manufacture the necessary drilling equipment, and Brandon left for Chile. Along with others, he began drilling a 2,000-foot hole into the ground, working three or four days at a time without any sleep. 37 days later, Plan B succeeded, and the miners were rescued. But because he didn't want all the attention, Brandon wasn't there when the miners emerged. He'd already gone back home, back to work on his next project. And later, one of his employees said of the rescue, "We proved that Center Rock is a little company, but we do big things." We do big things. From the earliest days of our founding, America has been the story of ordinary people who dare to dream. That's how we win the future. We're a nation that says, "I might not have a lot of money, but I have this great idea for a new company. I might not come from a family of college graduates, but I will be the first to get my degree. I might not know those people in trouble, but I think I can help them, and I need to try. I'm not sure how we'll reach that better place beyond the horizon, but I know we'll get there. I know we will. We do big things. The idea of America endures. Our destiny remains our choice. And tonight, more than two centuries later, it's because of our people that our future is hopeful, our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
Well, that pretty much wraps up the speech. You know, in thinking about this, Jake, you know, a couple of things pop right into my head. You know, the thing that we do big things. If you want to take something very positive from this, before we go back and we look at some of the things not so thrilled about, the idea that we do big things. I agree with that. I've said that for the longest time. We need to have that national conversation that, you know, as he pointed to, the Sputnik moment. We need to be looking to the future, and thinking of doing big things. And I agree with that.
What's positive with our country, the soldiers in Iraq. He called out, and I thought it was beautiful, the young man who did so much and might have saved a lot of, well, he did. He saved a lot of those Chilean miners. Did fantastic work. Those are the kind of positive things for America. Some of the stuff he mentioned, I think we have some problems with, yep, including the Panama-Colombia Free Trade Agreements. I agree with him on the defense spending. Freezing spending the next 5 years, again, it goes back to where exactly are you going to cut,
yep,
to maintain that.
And when we come back, we're going to talk to Abe Amoroz from the Laborers International Union. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What did you think of this? I'm still digesting. When we come back, we'll talk with Abe Amoroz right back after this.
listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. GM is adding a third shift to the Flint, Michigan truck plant. About 750 workers will return to work there. The UAW welcomes the news and says it's a sign that the joint labor management government effort to save the domestic auto industry was a good investment that will mean a more secure future for American workers. The Flint-made Chevy Silverado was named Motor Trend Magazine's Truck of the Year. Teamsters Local 237 President Greg Floyd in New York says there needs to be shared sacrifice as states and cities strive to balance their budgets, and that means the haves, the rich and corporations, paying more taxes to support public services, not just workers taking pay and pension cuts.
If we all give a little, we can get there, meaning how much money do you need from labor? How much do you need from the financial institutions? How much do you need from the billionaires and millionaires that they don't get tax breaks? Everyone has to pay their fair share. Everyone. This has to be shared sacrifice.
Floyd says his members are paid an average salary of just $27,000 a year, and retirees get an average of $19,000 a year in pensions.
Public workers' compensation is not out of whack because in recent years we've been given benefits and pensions in lieu of salary. So they're not out of whack. What's out of whack is that America has decided that they want to balance their whole financial problem on the backs of public workers.
The fate of Social Security continues to be a hot issue, and advocates of the government program are focusing a great deal of their fire at the president. Jesse Russell reports.
Waiting to hear how President Barack Obama addresses Social Security during his State of the Union address tonight will have many advocates of the program at the edge of their seats. Former Connecticut Representative Barbara Cannelli, with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, said during a conference call on Monday that slashing the program is unnecessary.
We don't have to cut Social Security to be fiscally responsible. Cutting Social Security benefits for future generations will do absolutely nothing to solve our current fiscal crisis. The American people understood, and that's why they have said clearly and repeatedly, they do not support cutting Social Security benefits to pay for the deficit.
Eric Kingston is with the Strengthen Social Security campaign, and he said public opinion has consistently shown strong support of Social Security.
Social Security works, that there is nothing that provides more secure protection against lost wages when people retire, when people are disabled, or if a parent or a spouse dies. 70 to 80% of the public across all political dimensions say they do not want to see Social Security benefits cut.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
I give my head to the new constitution. Take a bow for the new revolution. Money free, let the change all around. Pick up my guitar and play. Just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Todd on line one. How are we doing tonight, Todd?
I'm doing quite well. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm good. What'd you think?
I was very impressed. I thought it was a great speech. I think President Obama is a wonderful speaker and a great representative of our fine country. I think he made some wonderful points, and first and foremost, everyone's all concerned about cutting. Where are we going to cut? Well, let's start with the wars. Let's bring those boys home. Let's
Absolutely.
Bring those boys and girls home. Right. Let's stop wasting money on a war that we shouldn't have started in the first place. Let's put those people on our borders and protect our country. Secondly, I think we need to cut the tax breaks for the millionaires and billionaires. There's no reason that the top 2% of America should get a tax break. The same goes for corporations who are paying zero to little taxes whatsoever, while people making $20,000 a year are getting hit with a 25% tax cut. Let's improve on our infrastructure. Let's start building things again. As compared to building bombs, let's build some roads. I'm sick and tired of the Republicans saying that they want to cut spending, yet they're still taking money from the lobbyists who are building unnecessary military equipment that even the Pentagon says we don't need. Let's cut that. You know, there's a lot of good things that we can do to start cutting. And, you know, I just hope that the Republicans were actually listening to what the president says tonight. And we're going to, you know, maybe we can stop with this whole stupid repeal of health care. Why spend $230 billion to cut a bill that's actually going to help the American people? As President Obama said, let's fix what needs fixing and let's move on. Let's stop wasting time. Speaking of wasting time, let's stop arguing about abortion, for crying out loud. Oh. I mean, you know, there are so many things the Republicans are just insisting on wasting our time with these dog and pony shows. It's ridiculous. Let's actually get back to doing what America is supposed to be doing, and that means working. That means helping the American workers. Stop complaining about the unions, and let's maybe do something about these CEOs making billions and billions of dollars in profits while at the same time they're letting people go. Let's make the CEOs responsible. I say let's put a ceiling cap on the CEOs. We put a cap on our professional athletes. Let's put a cap on the CEOs.
Right there with you. I couldn't have said it better myself, Todd.
Well, again, I appreciate that somebody's out there speaking for the American people. I think President Obama does a great job. I support him. I still think he's compromising too much with the Republicans, because for the last 2 years, they haven't done anything but say no. Let's see him provide some of their own ideas now that they have control of the House. Let's see if they can actually back up their words with some action.
I'm right there with you. Absolutely. Amen. Amen. I couldn't have said it better. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too. You know, I look at that, and wow, could not have said it better. But here's the thing, and talking about some of the corporate CEOs and the corporate tax rates, and we're going to get to Abe Amaros here in a second, but the president said, quote, over the years, a parade of lobbyists have rigged the tax code to benefit particular companies and industries. Understand, General Electric paid a negative 11% tax. That means in order for them to be in this country, we paid them 11% of their budget to stay. Wait a minute, not stay, ship thousands of jobs overseas. Half of their workforce is out of this country. And we've appointed their CEO as the job czar. So interesting stuff. I got Abe Amaros on the line. He is the Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union, LIUNA. Abe, what'd you think, buddy?
I got to tell you, Rick, I thought it was a very good speech. I think he hammered away at some of the more fundamental points that we have in common. And I just have to say that your previous caller, Todd, was fantastic. I mean, that guy was right on the money. In fact, I think that was a better analysis than most of the talking heads that I've heard all night.
I agree.
Before the speech or even after the speech. What I liked about the president's comments were as follows. I liked his redoubling efforts on community colleges, because many of our workers who are displaced have to start over again. They have to go back to the drawing board. And community colleges are excellent places for them to get that new start, that fresh start. I like the fact that the president talked about infrastructure. I mean, we really have to put our tax dollars back into fixing our crumbling roads, our crumbling highways, and make sure that by doing so, we invest in our workers as well. I was just astonished when, the president went on about how they have faster trains, they have newer airports from China. And here in the United States, I mean, we're struggling to keep up with a very good and efficient infrastructure. How else are we going to move our people, our goods, and really turn that into a plus for our economy than to really concentrate on that infrastructure? The fact that we have a trade agreements with India, with China, that are creating 250,000 jobs here at home, and the fact that he mentioned the agreement that we have with Korea that is creating 70,000 jobs. I want to see more of that. I want to see more American jobs. I want to see more construction jobs. I want to see more heavy manufacturing jobs, highway jobs here in this country, because we need them. We need them now. The other thing that I liked about the president's speech was the fact that he said, let's cut out those tax breaks to the millionaires.
Absolutely.
I mean, enough is enough. We can't afford continued tax cuts for the wealthiest of Americans. And I think what he said at the end was, It's not a matter of punishing their successes, but promoting American success. And what is wrong with promoting American success? It's the same thing that labor has stood up for decades. What is wrong with a family-sustaining wage with good health care benefits and a pension after they retire? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So, you know, I wanted to see a little bit more of a push, Rick, against the House Republicans, because I got to tell you, Speaker Boehner, notwithstanding the fact that he started sweeping floors in his dad's bar,
right,
and he had those working class roots, the guy still scares me. And a Republican-controlled House that is trying to undo most of the good work that the president has done over the last several years is harrowing to me, and it should be to every working man and woman here in Pennsylvania, because they're threatening the livelihood of many working families, my friend.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, one of the things that that he talked about is this idea of job training. You mentioned about the community colleges. And I've been hearing a lot of Republicans saying we need to do away with a lot of job training programs. There are too many job training programs out there. You know, teaching people how to use a computer, it's a waste of time, according to a couple of Republicans. So when I hear that, I think back to something we talked about last night with Frank Emspeck from Workers Independent News. He said, you know, when he worked at GE, he was talking about how we started with the circuit boards, and that the machine that made the circuit boards used to actually make shoes. It was for, you know, poking into leather. And it's that innovation where you're looking at a machine, you're looking at a problem, and it's right in front of you, and you're able to grow upon that and have the capacity to do that. We're losing that. We've got a major brain drain going on, and it scares me.
Yes, and there's reason to be scared, Rick, and you're absolutely right. Those Republicans who wish to give out more corporate tax cuts for the wealthiest of Americans, they don't want to invest in those necessary trends and those things that are taking place in biomedical technologies and information technologies and clean energy technologies. That's the wave of the future, and we need to start training our workers and our young people to be part of that future success, because it's clearly out there, and it's clearly the wave of tomorrow. We need to start investing in those green technologies, those energy efficient technologies, and we need to retrain our workers. So, I mean, that's a success story for those shoemakers now making chips. We can emulate that. We can duplicate it. There's no reason why we can't.
Well, I thought it was interesting that he kind of pointed out that the Chinese are kicking our behinds.
Oh, my.
You know, and it's about time somebody's got to recognize that we're getting our lunches eaten.
That's right. And I think you throw in India as well. I mean, we have to be cognizant of the fact that we need a more educated workforce in this country. And you know what really bothers me, Rick, is when we were under the Bush regime, and I have to call it a regime because it was downright scary to me, they placed an emphasis on mediocrity. It was okay to not be smart. And I don't understand how anywhere in any civilized society on the planet, not having skills, not being smart, can be celebrated. But that's something that we're slowly coming out of. We have an articulate president. We have leaders that exude confidence and an ability to speak, articulate their thoughts on both sides. And I think that we need to instill those values in our young people, especially our children. And I one of the best applause lines of the night was, you know, we can celebrate Super Bowl champions, but we ought to be celebrating the kid that wins the science fair.
Amen.
I could not agree more.
Yeah, and
at some point, we need to say, you know, it's okay to be smart. It's cool to be smart. So then those kids could be encouraged to get higher degrees, come back and become more efficient members and more productive members of our growing economy.
Yeah, and looking at the education part of it, it's interesting. The story that he picked out just 3 years ago, he was talking about the school that was a failure. Now 97% of the students are walked out with a diploma. You know, instead of, you know, I bring that here to Pennsylvania, instead of us talking about vouchers, how to divide our school district up, how to do some of the craziness that we're talking about doing, maybe take some lessons from there and figure out how to bring up the schools that aren't doing so well, instead of figuring out how to divide and conquer them.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in best practices, we owe it to the next generation to really cultivate those best practices and bring the most in, out of everybody. Everyone has a talent. Everyone has the ability to learn, and everyone has the ability to improve. And I think it's our moral responsibility to pull it out of those individuals.
You know, early on in the speech, Abe, I got to be honest, I was going, "Oh, here we go, we're pandering to the big businesses," because he said, "quote, we're poised for progress. Two years after the worst recession most of us have ever known, the stock market has come roaring back. Corporate profits are up. The economy's growing again. But millions of people are unemployed. Millions more are homeless. We've got all these problems that, you know, a little bit didn't address. It seemed to me a little bit too much weighted toward pandering to the Jeffrey Imelts of the world."
Yeah, in fact, that's one thing I did not like. And you know, I think I started saying this earlier, but let me just emphasize it again. What I wanted out of the president was for him to take a firm stance against what the Republicans are going to be throwing at him in 2011 in anticipation of 2012. I wanted to see a more fervent defense of the successes of the last 2 years, and I basically wanted him to say, "All right, I've got this block on my shoulder. I dare you to knock it off now." He didn't do that. It was a very centrist speech. It was a good speech. I'm not complaining, but it was centrist. I think there was a lot. I mean, it was like a buffet. You could please everybody with this speech, just about, unless you're, you know, just a terrible non-supporter of the president because he happens to be a Democrat or for whatever reason. But I did want him to take a little stronger stance on some things. But I was pleased, like I said earlier, about community colleges, about infrastructure, and the fact that he wanted to repeal those tax breaks for the wealthiest.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have got to be thrilled with him saying within 25 years, it's the goal of the administration to give 80% of Americans access to high-speed rail and 98% of people access to high-speed wireless.
Absolutely.
That's huge.
That's huge. That means our guys and gals will have opportunities for more work, and that could even stimulate the next generation having those jobs available to them and those opportunities made as well.
Let's ask the last question I've got for you. You know, I'm looking at the trade agreements. You know, he's talking about it's unprecedented, this South Korean trade agreement, unprecedented support from business and labor. Really?
You know, I don't see it yet, Rick. I got very excited about the line, my friend, but, you know, we've been sold lines before, and now I want to see the proof. I really need to see the details, and I just want to make sure that, in the end, our guys and gals are taken care of, and they're taken care of correctly, and we're not given the short end of the stick, because, quite frankly, we've heard that kind of rhetoric before. That it was going to benefit our workers, and at the end of the day, that's all that matters to me, is that our workers are taken care of.
Let me ask you one question. I know that I said that was the last one, but I
okay.
quick check my email, and one of the folks who emailed me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, had a question. Ask you about the brain pool of our young people who want the Dream Act and don't want to go elsewhere.
Well, let me tell you, I really believe that this is the land of opportunities. And I think that every individual who wants to contribute something constructive and positive to the fabric of the United States should be afforded that opportunity. After all, we are all children and grandchildren of immigrants. Every single one of us, unless you're a Native American, is a child or a grandchild of an immigrant. And I believe firmly in the American dream, and that American dream exists for every single individual, regardless of ethnicity, color, creed, background, religion, sexual orientation, etc. So I do believe that there is enough room in our economy to make sure that those American success stories are seen, heard, and embraced.
Amen. Great commentary, Abe. I appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much.
You got it, pal.
And D, thank you for the email. Again, if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dr. Stephen Herzenberg from the Keystone Research Center is going to talk about the jobs angle.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members. D, Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902. Call BBS at 1-866-02-2561.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customers. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross of Blue Shield Association.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair once. The Rick Smith Show.
I guess if you're was that in this speech for everybody to get a little fired up about? I know talking to Abe. They're thrilled with the fact that, doing things, a commitment to big ideas, a commitment to innovation and investment, but still while talking about cuts. Interesting stuff. To help us work through some of this stuff, I've got Doc Connell, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. Steve, welcome to the program.
Good, Rick. Great to be here.
I guess, what are your first thoughts?
Well, there were some things I liked in it, but there were some things that troubled me. I do think the argument about the government in, innovation or in creating the American economy of the future with the reference back to Sputnik, and some discussion about the important role of government going forward in terms of the new energy economy, all of that is on the right track and sort of very in practical terms talking about the ability that economic growth really is critically dependent on government as well as on the private sector. So I thought that part was good. Some of the discussion near the end in terms of the role of government needing to be updated, I'm okay with. I mean, I get, the appetite out there for updating the government in that sector and city. I get practical value of that. But my biggest concern about the speech is, in terms of the current economy, right, the fact that we have 14 or 15 million people unemployed.
The fragile nature of
the fragile
so-called
nature of the recovery.
Right.
That wasn't very, there wasn't much about that, whether it's, whether it's saying explicitly that, yes, we've got to deal with deficits, but not yet. We've got to wait till we're out of the woods. Or whether it's the sort of longer term issue, we talk about the jobs deficit and we talk about the wage deficit, right? The loss in income, within the middle class, which we estimate in Pennsylvania is over $3,000 a full-time worker lost because the gains of growth have been so tilted to the very top end, right? So, and if you want the private sector to pick up from government spending, and allow it ultimately to deal with the budget deficit and long-term debt, then we need a robust middle class.
And here's the thing, in picking up on that, him talking about freezing federal workers' pay, which everybody admits is not a solution. Huckabee himself said it's just a ploy. This is the wrong signal for me.
Yeah, so I mean, one of my colleagues in an email exchange, partly saying this felt like a Clinton speech to some extent, and also saying that this might have been a speech if you were expecting a robust recovery, right? So you know, if unemployment was going to go from whatever it is now, 9%, roughly speaking, to, you know, 7% or 6.5% by the election in November 2012, you know, then maybe that supports where Anna and taken again the practical center. But my read on the economy is weaker than that. So it's both that I'm more concerned about the people in the front lines of this slow recovery. I'm more concerned about the long-term threat to the middle class. But I also real questions about the politics of this and you know the people who were advising the president and helping with that speech clearly are they better be more confident about the recovery than I am. Otherwise, they're lousy political advisors.
Yeah, you know, let me ask you about the South Korean trade agreement that he is saying is unprecedented in its support from business and labor. I only know one labor union that's come out in support of it. That's obviously the UAW. So I'm kind of concerned where that's coming from.
You know, again, to me, free trade is one of these issues where I've been waiting now for two Democratic presidents to reframe the issue, right? I mean, that free trade is still seen in policy circles through the lens of the free market economist, right? And so you have trading between two countries. You have a larger economy. You can get more economies of scale or greater efficiency with each country specializing in what it's best at. And again, all of that economic theory is just doesn't really apply to the unprecedented integration between rich and poor countries, right? That are part of what's been going on now for 30 years, right?
Right.
So again, I've been waiting for a practical discussion around, we've got these great trade imbalances, including with China, that can't last forever. You know, we've got these challenges around the differences in labor standards, environmental standards, and if you don't address those issues directly, how do you prevent a race to the bottom in terms of standards? You know, President Obama likes this phrase, race to the top, in the education context. So where's the race to the top, you know, in labor and environmental standards, and where's the trade agreement that achieves that? So I'm, you know, clearly, I'm not a very happy camper right now. I'm a little bit, again, lost in terms of, how this inspires the electorate and return turnout in 2012 to what it was in 2008. I don't know how. This was a fairly technocratic speech.
Yep. Trying to steal more, I think trying to steal the Republican thunder, if you will, trying to steal their plays for the next couple of months a little bit.
Yeah, and there was a lot of populism in this speech.
Medical malpractice, I don't know that's populism.
Yeah, no, and again, some of that I'm okay with. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not an expert on that issue, and I know that for certain folks, that's absolutely not the right thing, because it leaves people, you know, because medical malpractice suits are a key check on healthcare errors and a source of protection for patients. I don't pretend to be an expert on that issue. So again, on that issue and on again, the issue of, do we need to, update the way that government operates and revisit the way certain kinds of functions are split across a bunch of departments. Sure, we absolutely, you don't need to do that kind of common sense stuff. So I'm okay with some of that. But you know, I've been waiting for the next New Deal since the early 1980s, where, again, my own viewpoint, I'm an optimist by nature. My own viewpoint is that we have this massively more productive economy now than we did, you know, in the 1970s. We've got these fantastic new technologies in industry after industry. We actually know how to manage people better than and develop and use their skills, you know, better than we used to. Think Southwest Airlines, think Costco, you know, retail. But, you know, so of course we don't choose to run our whole economy based on treating people the way they're treated at the best employers. And we actually don't choose to run our economy in a way that leads most companies to use technology as effectively as they could, right? So, but I'm still basically, I believe there is a next New Deal there waiting to be born with the right kind of government investment and government regulations and labor standards, you know, that sort of, if you lift up the bottom of the labor market, you know, I mean, part of the productivity of the 40s and 50s and 60s was the mechanization of agriculture, the mechanization of low-wage manufacturing in the South. Right, we got 3% productivity growth year after year, partly because we pushed up on the bottom, and so we spread the kind of technological innovations that had been pioneered in the first decades of the 20th century. So, again, to me, where's the analogy? We've had all this innovation. We know how to have a massively more productive economy. Absolutely, the role of a Democratic president should be, first of all, let's articulate how we invest in the future so that we keep technological innovation going. And we continue to be the place that comes up with new ideas and new discoveries. That part of what the president said, I think, was on target. But again, the part about how we update our regulations and how we stop companies from going down the low road or competing based on squeezing, you know, workers or despoiling the environment. I mean, that part of the recipe, you know, which makes the economy more productive and actually rebuilds the middle class because you're lifting up the bottom again.
Yep.
That's missing. And I've got a bunch of ideas why, but it's frustrating. I do think that there is this positive Reagan-esque kind of future that the president has the skills to articulate for people, but for whatever reason, that's not, you know, he's only got a best a part of that kind of vision that he's articulating.
So overall with this, you're a little disappointed, because I got to be honest, I was expecting the huge olive branch to the Republicans again, this race to the center, very Clinton-esque, and I think that's what we got tonight.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. So you I guess were better prepared for this than I was. So,
I got to be honest. I've been quite disappointed for the last week at least, when he named Jeffrey Eimelt as, you know, the head of his job creation, or whatever you want to call him, the job czar, if you will, a guy who has outsourced more jobs than I think any other CEO in the country. You're going to put him in charge of creating jobs, especially when you look at GE, who had a negative tax input to the nation of about 11% from what we've found out. So
right.
We actually paid them.
Right. I mean, everything is relative. I was expecting another kind of liberal free market economist like Larry Summers. So I thought an actual business guy might be an improvement.
Okay. Well.
But you got to sort of pick your poison, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where's a progressive economist? It's not like, you know, there are some of us out there.
You know, let's try something that, I don't know, hasn't been tried before.
Yeah, Robert Rice, Ray Marshall, you know, what about
Joseph Stiglitz, anybody.
You know, exactly, Paul Krugman, right, well, you know. I'm surprised at the politics of this, because there was a piece recently about President Obama being frustrated. He's going to his economists and saying, you know, how do I create jobs without spending too much money, right? So there was a sense in that story, again, that he wasn't that happy with the economic options he was being given. And I thought I was picking up, you know, some concern on his part that I don't want to be stuck, implicit, not explicit, but I don't want to be stuck running for president with unemployment at 8%, right? And to me, that should exactly be what's keeping him up at night, at least as a politician, as well as someone who cares about working families and the unemployed. And, you know, again, maybe maybe he's got those concerns, but this was the best he could offer because he's not getting very creative advice on how to do better. Or, you know, maybe, you know, in the last couple of weeks, he's become more convinced that the, on a stronger rebound.
There's part of me that thinks, and this is pretty much the last question, the last direction I want to go here. Part of me thinks that, you know, he's come to the realization that he's got to move to the right, to pander to the businesses who are sitting on, from all reports that I read, sitting on mountains of cash, just waiting for somebody else, I think. And he's trying to reach out to get them to, you know, do anything they can do to create jobs so that the economy will turn around, if not for his own reelection, at least for the country to move in the right direction.
So he's trying to stop the capital strike.
Yeah, I had a guy over at the state capitol here tell me that the capitalists have had it. They're not doing anything until all of you socialists are out of here. And I'm going, well, I'm not a socialist, but, you know, okay.
Right.
But there's this thought process out there that, you know, they're sitting on mountains of cash just waiting for somebody else.
Yeah, and I'd be inclined, I mean, I guess I don't think in that kind of conspiratorial terms. What I do think is that some of that cash is staying on the sideline. Well, some of the cash is staying on the sideline so people can buy back their stock and drive up their stock options and make bigger bonuses.
That's
we should be talking about more. And because you look at the numbers, profits have recovered faster than ever in this recovery, but investment hasn't recovered. So there is, you know, data showing that they're sitting on more cash. And again, I'm inclined to think it's a combination of companies are uncertain about the economy, you know, and that in some cases they're happy to play these financial games because, oh, by the way, that means I get a $20 million bonus.
Which means we need to start raising some of the top tax rates, I think.
Well, absolutely it means that. And, you know, when we need to be outing these people and, you know, again, making this basic information more public and, yeah, raising the top tax rates. But we're not going to be doing that federally in the next, you know, couple of years, right?
Or on the state level.
So we can try to do, we capture some of that money at the state level.
Not in this state.
Well, you can do a little bit. You're right with the Constitution.
No, not with Governor Corbett. No tax, no fees.
With the political lineup. You're not even talking about the constitutional tax. No, you're right. So I think we have to more of that debate. I mean, again, I'm inclined to it's an unusual business that is trying to manipulate the nation's politics through, you know, by sitting on cash. You know, in their investment decisions or the decisions not to invest, but maybe.
Yeah, well, we shall soon see. Steve, I appreciate your input. I appreciate your thoughts. Thanks
good.
So much.
Thanks, Rick.
A quick break. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Going to spend the rest of the program talking about the speech. We'll get your thoughts after this.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspect an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your... Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa or calling 717-695-4722.
The man who sends the investor class thanks for their tax shelters.
Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. He won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
1-888-520-7425. What'd you think? What was in it for you? For me, I got and it's something we've been talking about in this program from the very beginning. Investment, smart investment, smart policy, building things, thinking big, building something. The high-speed rail, I like the idea that, committing 25 years down the road where 80% of the people are going to have access to high-speed rail. To me, that is a huge thing. I just had a conversation with a friend who had spent some time in Europe, and he said, there's nothing better than be move around the country without having a car. Public transportation is so much better because they had the problems we're going through years ago. They made the decision years ago to increase the taxes on gasoline and not to subsidize the oil industry, as the president talked about, and the subsidies, which I've been calling for years. We should be paying the true cost of gasoline, because then maybe there'll be some call for efficient cars, one, transportation. The poor folks in this country like me who would love to be able to take a bus ever here into Harrisburg, where our studios are, from my home in Carlisle, it just makes sense. And to be able to tie some of those things together, to move around this country on a rail, to me is just smart policy. And like you said, kind of got a little bit of a sense of humor left, instead of going through those pat-downs. To me, I don't want to fly anymore. So, interesting. I want to talk about education as well, because he did put some things out there for the younger generation. I had a conversation today with a younger friend who, you've got to reach out to the young people. What's the country have for them? What is it that's going to draw the young folks in? Me, who are in college, trying to make our way. And look, the president pandered on Social Security, but you old folks, everything's going to be fine. Didn't say anything to the young people to say that it's going to be there when you go to retire. And I think that needs to be reiterated often to read that. Look, you're 20, 25 years old. You're paying into the system. It's going to be there for you. But I think that commitment has to be made by us as a nation. And while you've got the Republicans who are working very hard to destroy it and to really tear it down, I think people need to hear that there's a commitment. And I think we, the voting people, need to talk about the commit. And, it's just what it is. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Show, changing America for the better.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WI Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. GM is adding a third shift to the Flint, Michigan truck plant. About 750 workers will return to work there. The UAW welcomes the news and says it's the joint labor management government effort to save the domestic auto industry was a good investment that will mean a more secure future for American workers. The Flint-made Chevy Silverado was named Motor Trend Magazine's Truck of the Year. Teamsters Local 237 President Greg Floyd in New York says there needs to be shared sacrifice as states and cities strive to better budgets, and that means the haves, the rich and corporations, paying more taxes to support public services, not just workers taking pension cuts.
If we all give a little, we can get there, meaning
How much money do you need from labor? How much do you need from the financial institutions? How much do you need billionaires and millionaires that they don't get tax breaks? Everyone has to pay their fair share. Everyone. This has to be shared sacrifice.
Floyd says his members are paid an average salary of just $27,000 a year, and retirees get an average of $19,000 a year in pensions.
Public workers' compensation is not out of whack because in recent years we've been given benefits and pensions in lieu of salary. So the whack is that America has decided that they want to balance their whole financial on the backs of public workers.
The fate of Social Security can do, and advocates of the government program are focusing a great deal of their fire at Jesse Russell reports.
Waiting to hear how President Barack Obama's Social Security during his State of the Address tonight will have many advocates of the program at the edge of their seats. Former Connecticut Representative Barbara Cannelli, National Committee to Social Security and Medicare, this call on Monday that slashing the program is unnecessary.
We don't have to cut Social Security to be fiscally responsible. Cutting Social Security benefits for future generations will do absolutely nothing to resolve our current fiscal crisis. The American people understood, and that's why they have said clearly and repeatedly, they do not support cutting Social Security benefits to pay for the deficit.
Kingston is with the Strengthen Social Security campaign, and he said public opinion has consistently shown strong support of Social Security.
Social Security works, that there is nothing that provides more secure protection against lost wages when people retire, when people are disabled, or if a parent or a spouse dies. 70 to 80% of the public across all political dimensions say they do not want to see Social Security benefits cut.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, as we said earlier, the Tea Party people are all up in arms in Minnesota because she doesn't speak for us, even though she's giving the Tea Party Express alternative State of the Union. And, you know, people bash Obama for using a teleprompter. From what we're seeing, she evidently set it up wrong, so she's not even looking at the camera. And she's doing her PowerPoint presentation, which I guess is a first time for a rebuttal to the State of the Union. A nice PowerPoint. Nothing says unprepared like PowerPoint. Also, the CBS poll, 80% of the public say thumbs up, pretty positive. The 18% who were saying it's not so good, they were just ticked off that he didn't focus on the evil unions. He could have had 100% because he went after those federal workers and froze their pay. So they were happy with that evil teachers union. Spoke well of the teachers, but didn't focus on the evil teachers unions. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Thoughts, comments, ideas, what would you have liked to have seen? What did you get out of this? I'm interested. What did you get, Jake?
Well, I think it was a mixed bag. I see some good things. I see some things that I'm not pleased with, and I see some things that the jury is out. Let me get you an example. I think you and I can both agree that eliminate the exemptions for corporate America is long in coming. That's a good thing. Pushing Panama and Colombia free trade agreements? No. Give him a no on that. South Korea? He may have overemphasized the agreement on that among labor. Of course, the UAWs.
So you mean it's not unprecedented?
What's that? No. I don't think so. The UAW, at least publicly, is happy. But there's some people in labor who really don't want a South Korean free trade agreement, they believe. It's constituting now, it's not a good deal.
I question the 35% domestic content.
Yes.
That, to me, that's huge.
It almost seems like, you know, and I hate to maybe it's not fair to even say this, but it seemed like the UAW was reaching on that one.
Well,
trying to get at least something.
There's a little arm twisting going on there.
Freezing spending next 5 years. What I want to know, Rick, maybe you can answer that, is he talking about no governmental agency or department?
He said domestic spending.
Domestic
which
spending.
Which is about 12% of the budget.
Okay. Okay.
That's not talking about Medicare, Medicaid, or the military.
That's probably a pragmatic move that will, you know, a lot of Americans can agree with if it's done right.
I don't have a problem with that. Here's the thing. I go back to what Huckabee said. And Huckabee was talking about the about freezing the federal workers' wages. You know, said basically it's just window dressing. It's, you know, it's not going to do anything to really solve the problem. It's a political ploy because it's what he would do. I mean, you got to understand these guys are political hack. This guy's a political hack, and even he sees that, you know, it's a ploy to get you know, folks on board with it. Personally, I think it's a mistake, but you know, we will see what happens.
Proof is in the pudding at the end of the day.
In fact, you know, here is what he said. Well, if I would plug in my machine here, I would have been able to play the clip for you. Here's the clip right here.
Reads is a smart idea. It's not going to solve the deficit crisis, but it is a symbolic move.
So, you know, it's not going to solve anything, but it is a symbolic move. And that's Mike Huckleberry saying that. So, mm-hmm. You know.
Okay. Cut defense by billions. He actually said he has the military brass on board. That's a good thing. I think that's very doable. Medical malpractice. Yeah. I believe there are some things that labor would be willing to compromise on. But you got to be very careful.
I don't know that has anything to do with labor.
Well, it does. It does in the sense that it affects consumers. It does in the broad sense. I'm sure some lawyer organizations are not going to be pleased with that. But if you're going to look at it, be very, very careful that you don't take people's right to sue away. And, you know, I mean, let's be honest, business interest would like to limit that to the degree as possible. So I wait and see on that one. I have to say, for the most part, I'd shy away from that. He's talking about opposing extending tax breaks. That's a win-win. That's an easy win. That's a big plus. Simplify tax code. We'll veto any bill with earmarks. What's your feeling on that, Rick?
Again, it's another one of these political ploys. It's another one of these, you know, he's taking away the Republican thunder and he's giving himself the opportunity that if the Republicans do what they do, which is lie, and throw in some of these earmarks because, look, everybody's got the appetite to bring home the bacon, to build the federal building in their district, to have the jobs come to their district so they can have the ribbon cutting. You know, he's going to take away their, and it's a smart political move.
Absolutely. Well,
if you could take away that ribbon cutting, that's a good thing.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, simplify tax code, that's a big... That's a big word. I mean, you can simplify tax. That's exactly right. And at the same time, I do believe there's going to be...
Does that mean flat tax? Does that mean, you know, a flat tax? I sure hope not.
No, I don't.
I'm not in favor of that, and I hope the president is not.
What I'm saying is it's a good political move because it at least you're doing something in the eyes of the public, and I think you could do minimal damage. Now, with the earmarks, I think the Republican Party... within their own ranks, and the Tea Party people are going to put a lot of pressure on the leadership to own up to their campaign promises. Praise the military in Iraq, according to him, and I agree with him. America has kept its word to the degree that applies.
We just need to get out of that whole sandbox.
Right. At the same time, he's saying it's time to leave.
Just close the door and get out of the sandbox.
Setting up a government oversight website, I can agree with that. That's kind of a secondary issue, but a positive. Open college campuses to military recruiters. Not so sure I agree with this, Rick. First of all, right now, with the economy the way it is, I don't think the military has a problem with bringing people in simply out of economic necessity. But beyond that, I do believe that each university should have that option, whether they want them on their campus.
At the end of this, you know, and we can go down the whole laundry list, and that seems to be what you're doing. There are some things that didn't get into this that I think are important. And this whole movement that he made to the right is kind of frustrating. He did not do anything to explain how we got here. There was no discussion about how we got into this mess and the monumental task it was to dig out of this, which is why, again, you know, I'm thinking tactically. You got to question the people advising him. Personally, I would have taken a more direct approach, said, look, you know, this recession, this $1.3 trillion deficit that we inherited from the Bush administration was not our doing. You know, the vast majority of the $14 trillion debt, not our doing. We had to dig out. We had to spend to save the economy. We need to do more spending. And, you know, it just didn't seem to be that the realities of our situation were what he was talking about. And maybe, you know, here's the thing, Jake, maybe the American people aren't interested in the realities. The reality is we're still in tough times. The reality is there's a good portion of the people in this country who are struggling. Wages are stagnant. Jobs are leaving the country. We're talking about more insane trade agreements. We're talking about more trade imbalances with the Chinese. None of that came up. And for me, I guess, you know, while he said, you know, we're gonna fight the terrorists and we're gonna win and we're gonna do all of that. And in fact, I think his direct quote was, "We will not relent, we will not waver, we will defeat you." I gotta be honest. I wish he would think that way on the economy, where you're gonna put this country first instead of this, oh, we're gonna work together kind of thing.
Well, as Steve said, there wasn't a lot of populism in his speech.
There absolutely was not.
That's obviously his advisors are very calculating on that. It was obviously done deliberately. Certainly that would appeal, that not bringing up that combative, and it would be a combative stance, but it has to, I think long term, it has to be addressed if we're going to move ahead as a nation. But I think there was a deliberate decision made by his advisors not to do that, to appeal to the middle. Again, that's one of the negatives, Rick. But I do like our buddy Abe said, the emphasis on community colleges is also a good thing. So you got to give the president credit in some areas, in other areas, not so good.
Well, again, you know, it's this march to the middle. And look, we said from the beginning that's what was going to happen. We knew he was going to make that giant olive branch across the aisle. We knew that was coming. Anyway, when we come back from the break, I want to pick this up, talk about some of the other things, take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm curious, thoughts, what you would have liked to seen in there that wasn't there, what you wish wasn't there that was. We're right back.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
At last, a small spark of sanity from Washington. After making a full scientific assessment of environmental impacts, the EPA has revoked the permit for the largest mountaintop removal project ever to assault the natural resources and the people of Appalachia. Unfortunately, this spark of sanity set off an explosion of babbling madness by the coal mining giants. Arch Cole, the holder of the permit, said it was shocked and dismayed that EPA would dare revoke it, shrieking that this was, quote, an onslaught by an overreaching agency that will have a chilling effect on future U.S. investments. Then came West Virginia's corporate-hugging senator, Joe Manchin III. It goes without saying, he began, before proceeding to say what did not need saying. Parroting Arch Cole's script, Joe called the revocation, quote, a shocking display of overreach that will have a chilling effect on investments. Joe was followed by a cabal of non-mining corporate interests which did a frantic Chicken Little imitation. Pulling this one permit, they screeched, will be staggering to the whole U.S. economy. Get a grip, people. This permit should never have been issued in the first place. It was carelessly handed out by the Bush regime, which was infested with industry operatives. Now, EPA has merely done the responsible environmental assessment that the Bushites refused to do. Talk about an onslaught that would be shocking, chilling, and staggering.
Bush's permit would have let Archco decapitate all the mountains in a 2,300-acre stretch of Appalachia, shove the toxic rubble and waste into the valleys, bury the streams, kill the wildlife, and pollute the water supply of people downstream. This is Jim Hightower saying, mountaintop removal is a brutal, total destructive abomination done solely to make quick profits for a handful of coal executives and rich absentee investors. It's about time they were told no.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, you good workers, good news to you out there. Pull out the good old union as going into twill. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
You know, the other thing that really wasn't in there, that wasn't in the president's speech at all, was helping out the states that are struggling. You know, we talked about last night. All 50 states are looking at a budget deficit of somewhere around $125 billion this fiscal year. And, you know, we saw nothing. We heard nothing out of it on how we're going to help states stay afloat, how we're going to keep the economy buoyed up. And, you know, it just popped into my head. Especially as today Tom Corbett released his reform package, which basically was just cut and paste from his campaign. Not much substance there, just, you know, platitude again. We're going to close the Office of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse. And of course, those public workers. Anyway, let's go to the phone line. I got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Oh, hey, it's just wonderful tonight, Rick. I had one of my predictions come true today.
Oh yeah, which one?
The one that said they're going to cut our pay 10%.
Well, I don't think that was a, you didn't need to be Nostradamus for that. You knew it was coming.
Hey, you know, it's when they come and give you that number where he says, my goal is 10% in 4 years of my administration. Well, figure it out. What does that tell you about the contract negotiations coming up with labor?
Yep.
It says, forget it. Which, yep. You know, they haven't scheduled any negotiations at all.
Well, I don't know that there'll be much negotiation. They're going to go, here it is, take it or leave it.
That's it. They're probably going to lay off 5,000 people to start with, so he'll know we're serious, and then go from there.
I look at this, and I got to be honest, it looks like it was cut and paste right from his campaign website. But you know, I guess today's a good time to release this because everybody's going to be talking about the president and the State of the Union tonight.
Let's face it, there was nothing in the State of the Union tonight for labor. Zero.
There was nothing in the State of the Union for middle class America.
That's right. There was zero. I mean, there was, you know, why bother? I mean, now, is this the guy that they're going to tell me as a labor leader I'm supposed to get people to vote for in 2 years?
You know,
I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, again, you know, when you look at speeches like this, and, you know, I know they're planning on or they're praying that the economy is going to turn around by 2012, but how do you... You know, with Jeffrey Eymelt as the job czar and now this speech, how do you get people fired up?
And their solution to jobs is, well, we're going to have all this trade because we're going to enter into these trade agreements. Are they morons? Do they not see that every trade agreement we have signed has cost jobs in this country?
But again, and you go back, who are the trade agreements for? They're not for you and me. They're not for the working people. They're for the big investor class. They're for the Wall Street types. It's not for you and me.
Yeah.
And again, I got to be honest. I like President Obama. I voted for the guy. I had high hopes for him. I still have high hopes. But, you know, the reality is somebody got him into a room and had a come-to-Jesus moment with him.
Yep, that's it, Rick. He's done. He's over. It's done.
Yeah, well.
I mean, where's our card check bill?
Well, you can bet that's not going to happen. And again, and you can ask Jake. I said right the day they introduced it several years back that it was never going to pass. Corporate America, as limited as that bill is and as weak as the language in that bill already is, they were never going to allow that to pass.
But what gets me, Rick, you know, I can accept that. I can accept that industry and the robber barons are never going to let average working people have a fair break. That's sort of the game. What I can't stand is that our own unions throw money at the likes of Arlen Specter, who's against us. Then they write a $50,000 check for the party for the governor here, his inauguration party, who's going to take 10% of our pay and probably everything else he can get in the next few years. Why are we doing that? You know, we could have given $50,000 to the food banks that fed our members during the Payless paydays, but we didn't do that. We gave $50,000 to the party for the guy who's going to slit our throat. What's that about, Rick?
It's about playing the political game, Mike.
Yeah, we're losing it.
And we are losing it.
We're losing it, and we're never going to win on that field. We are not. We don't have the resources to play in that league.
But at the end of this, Mike, what is it going to take? What again? For me, being part of a union is not the leadership. It's about the members. What do we do? How do we take this back? How do we, we're the ones who are divided. 51% of union members in this state voted for Pat Toomey.
It's worse than that. We've got about 50%, maybe 40% of the people who are called fair share. And they're going to get right to work. Well, like I said, every slave in the world's got the right to work. What's that about? You know, what they're fixing to find out, is what was won over 30 years of hard work by working men and women in this country, because they're going to lose it. And it's sort of like the old saying, you know, you really don't miss your water till the well runs dry.
Yeah.
And they're fixing to miss their water.
No, maybe we need that, Mike. I appreciate
that. That may be it. I mean, it may be it, and it's coming.
Maybe it's what we need.
This governor today, there wasn't a press conference.
No, nope, it was
with
just
cameras,
a release.
With opportunities to ask questions for clarity. This was email. That's it. Here's what you get. This is what we're going to do.
Well, get ready for that, because they control both chambers of the legislature and the governor's mansion. The Democrats should just stay in their districts. They should just be going around knocking on doors, because they're not going to be able to do much here.
Well, my one hope is that there are going to be enough Republican legislators who say, I'm going to have to go back to my district at some point in time. Things could be a little dicey when I go home. Like, you know, my house isn't there anymore.
Well, which takes me back to what do we have to do to organize people? What do we do? You know, it's not about the union leadership. It's about the members. It's about people. It's about organizing people. I keep coming back to that. How do we bring like-minded folks together? How do we get people calling programs like mine and saying and speaking like Todd did earlier, very passionately about the vision for the future? How do we do this organizing? That's what's got to happen.
Well, one of the problems is an organizing effort.
Right.
I don't know how to organize when I have to tell my membership that we just gave $50,000 of their dues to the guy who's going to take their jobs. How do I organize? How do I explain to them that that was a good thing for labor to do?
Yeah, I don't know that to be the case, and I hope that's not true.
What's that?
That you guys gave $50,000.
AFSCME gave $50,000 for the inauguration party of the new governor. That's a fact. We talked about it at a union meeting tonight. That's just the facts. All right?
Mike, I appreciate the call, buddy.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
I look at this and what do you say? To me, again, it comes back down to the individuals. We need to start a grassroots movement, much like the Tea Party did, only not become co-opted. Make it a members, a workers' movement. That's what has to happen. I mean, look at this speech. There's nothing in this about the middle class. There's nothing about how does Rick Smith take care of his family. There's nothing in here how Joe Sixpack takes care of his family. We've lost that rhetoric. The president has lost that. And I've got clips of him saying everything from, you know, the unions are the greatest thing ever created to, you know, we're gonna take things back and we're gonna put CEOs in their place. Look, at the end of the day, we didn't hold them accountable. Just didn't do it.
Nope. And the sad part about it is, because we didn't hold them accountable, and the Obama administration and Democrats didn't get near done what they should have, we lost the election, which ties his hands even further, forces him to the center, or worse.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, I go back and forth on this. You know, there were some things in there that I said, you know, this is the stuff we should have been talking about all along. And then I go to the parts that anger me. And I do spend a little bit of time focusing on the parts that anger me, which are the pandering to big business. Oh, we need to make this a business-friendly environment. He said at one point, and I'm going, how much more business-friendly do we have to get? You look at GE. We paid them.
Mm-hmm.
The stock market has come roaring back, the president said. Corporate profits are up. The economy is growing. For who? Unemployment hasn't come down that much. Wages haven't gone up. You know, he says, thanks to the tax cuts we passed, Americans' paychecks are a little bit bigger. The problem is with that, and again, you know, I can go through and rip this speech apart piece by piece. We took it from Social Security, so we're causing problems in the future. But, you know, sometimes you just have to look at this and go, who's on our side? You know, at one point he was talking about, you know, how the world has changed. You know, how, you know, you used to be able to go to get a job, and it was a good, decent job, and you were there for a lifetime, and you worked hard, and you had good benefits, and, you know, the occasional promotion he talked about, you know, maybe even your kids would go work there. You know, and now he says that's all changed. And I ask, why has that changed? Why has it changed? Is because we have destroyed borders for capital and for corporations. Corporate America can go anywhere and make their product and ship it back here without any problem. Understand, these trade deals are not about competing against Chinese companies or German companies or South Korean companies or any of that. It's not about competing. Stop that nonsense. It's not about competing. These are about American companies taking their production wherever's cheapest and bringing their products back here, products that we used to make. And I go back to this piece by Rich Lowry, the guy from the National Review, the one right-wing nutcase paper that's out there. You know, he's talking about that we produce as much product in the United States as we did back in the 50s, and we do it with much fewer people. But what he doesn't say is that, you know, we had a population of about a third the number of people. And, yeah, we've had major technological gains. But in the 1950s, how many times did you walk into a store and be able to find nothing made in the United States? So maybe we're making as much product. I, as a consumer, am not seeing it. And where the president was saying, you know, we're going to be tough and we're going to go after Al-Qaeda and we're going to do all this stuff, why aren't we taking that same me-first approach when it comes to defending American workers? Because it's not about American workers. It's about American corporations. It's about their profits, their bottom lines. And he said it right in the beginning. The stock market has come roaring back. That's the frame by which everything else is measured. If Wall Street is fat and happy, then the country must be fat and happy. But we're looking around, and I'm seeing a lot of homeless, I'm seeing a lot of unemployed, and I'm seeing an awful lot of people uninsured. So what are we going to do about it? I mean, you know, people got their lukewarm speech. That's what this was, Jake. The American people got, I think, what they want. Lukewarm, feel good, you know, middle of the road, conciliatory, if you will. They got their speech. That's why 82% are happy with it.
It's pretty much the long and the short of it, unfortunately.
And maybe he's learned the tone. And, you know, again, I like the guy. I do. I like Barack Obama. I think he has the ability to be a good president. Not this.
Well, I think at the end of the day, and we talked about this several times, you know, his advisors, I think, brought him in the room and said, look, President, you can't go after these corporations. You can't talk about eliminating their tax breaks because we don't have the ability anymore. We don't, in this next Congress, we don't have the ability to do that. So all you're going to do is aggravate them. It'll make it harder for you to get some conciliations from them. He's basically, you know, sucking up to them is what he's doing in hopes that they'll spend a few shekels in this country, which they should be doing all along.
Well, I mean, pointing out the fact that China has now the largest private solar research facility in the world and the world's fastest computer should have been the main crux of his speech. Do you want a Sputnik moment? You want the Manhattan Project? How do we compete against that? How do we make sure we're the country where this innovation happens? And it's not about being anti-Chinese or anti-Indian. It's about saying, okay, I'm not afraid of competing with anybody. But this is a stacked deck. This is a rigged game. And you and I, the working people here, and when we talked to Frank Emspeck last night, he made a perfect analogy with the machine that they used to put holes in leather with. You know, a new technology came up, these chips, these computer chips, and they go, gee, how can we get a machine that's going to make those? And, you know, they fit a machine that used to cut holes in leather, and that's how things happen. People tinkering around in their garage, people tinkering around with old technology, trying to figure out new how to use it for new applications. We're losing that manufacturing, and that's how new things happen. You know, the space program, they talk about NASA going to the moon and all that. Do you know how much other stuff came out of that? Just the research of doing that one thing, all of the products, all of the innovation, all of the advancements that came out of that, we're losing that. And we're losing it because we need a billionaire class. We need the wealth class to be fat and happy. We need them to, you know, to maybe, if they would please, consider creating another job for us. Amazing stuff. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
Family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We are AFSCME. Your working class radio experience,
where hard work, common sense, and rational thought
are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left, Rick shared a robbery. Father shot, left a cameo, blue dental, had his vein. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I want to thank Jason for sending me the email letting me know that former CEO and current chairman of Morgan Stanley, a guy named John Mack, was on the Charlie Rose Show this past Friday and showed his gratefulness for the welfare handout the American people gave him and his firm in 2008 by touting his many business trips to China, being a member of the Beijing Mayor's Council, and outrageously being on the advisory board of China's Sovereign Wealth Fund. So, yeah, hey, good stuff there. We spend a whole bunch of money, take a whole bunch of money out of our coffer, hand over to Morgan Stanley. And nice. And again, you know, but you look at the whole thing with IML. You look at the whole thing with GE. You go back into the history and you look at the fact that they've known for years their future was in the cheap labor and the emerging market there. And I guess from a business perspective, if you were solely business minded, what's in the best interest of my company, not my country, my company, China's probably a pretty good place to go, because the Chinese government give a whole bunch of money. They give property, they give cheap labor, whatever you want, the Chinese government will subsidize. We don't do that. Now, granted, we subsidize in other ways. We have an education system. We do have a regulatory system here that is, and a legal system that protects patents and copyrights and that stuff. China, not so much. Little hanky there. But if I'm looking at this as purely a business person, I'm looking at China as an opportunity, because eventually those folks are going to demand more wages. They're going to have a growing class of consumers, and you get your product to the right there in the market. So basically, they're hedging their bets. They're going to keep some jobs here, but for the most part, their development is overseas, and that's what a lot of U.S. companies are doing. And again, you got to stop calling them American companies. They're global corporations. They're transnational, multinational, whatever words you want to use. It's all about the money. And to hear the president talk about someone like GE in glowing terms, oh, you know, how wonderful they are. They've closed 26 factories since he's been president, but they have kept two open, which have gotten massive amounts of press. The 26 that closed, not so much. And I guess it's a lazy media. I guess it's, you know, I don't know, a lazy consumer of media? Not sure. But we need to organize. We need to rally around something. It's kind of what I think.
Seems like you're awfully frustrated.
I am frustrated. I'm frustrated in the fact that, you know, we put a lot of faith in this guy. And look, you know, you did a lot of work. You did a lot of stuff. And it's tough to come to the realization that you're not going to share in the wealth and prosperity that's going to come. Because, look, the economy's going to turn around. Understand that. You know, the big corporations, they've got piles of cash. Capital will figure out how to make more capital and feed the top of the scale. And this is what gets me. Because I'm like you guys, right here, smack in the middle class. Most of us are going down. Shrinking from the middle class as the middle class keeps getting squeezed. Very few of us are going up. You know, and that's the thing. You know, when the middle class squeezes, when that big, it's like a diamond. When you squeeze the diamond, generally things go up and to the top and the bottom. Problem here is, Nobody's going up. We're not getting the folks going upward. We're getting folks our class structure in this country is beginning to look like a triangle instead of a diamond. If that's a better way of looking at it. And I think at some point you're going to get folks who are going to have enough. And maybe Mike was right. You know, maybe eventually at some point people have had enough and they're disgusted and they come together and they fight back. You know, we've talked about it before.
Well, the one bright hope is that you and I both know, if you study history, it ebbs and flows. It ebbs and flows, and hopefully in the not-too-distant future, things will turn around. But you are so right about working people. I don't know if it's going to take more and more people hitting bottom. I would hope not, but I don't want to be too pessimistic, but maybe that's what it's going
to
take.
Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. I got Angela on line one. How are you doing tonight, Angela?
Hey, I'm good.
What'd you get from the speech?
I don't know. I thought it was kind of phony.
Well,
you arrived, and you know, you're talking about the hardworking people and how things are so disappointing. And I think it has to do with a lot of the educational system and the media by distracting people. And, you know, I'm 42, and I've been working since I've been 16. I've worked all my summer's vacations since I'm full-time, and I've worked hard. I went to school and worked two jobs at the same time after high school. And I have a degree, but you know what? I don't think I'm never going to be as well off as my parents that have nothing but a high school diploma.
I don't think I'll be as good as my grandparents, who, to be honest, my grandfather only went to the seventh grade.
Yeah, and you know what? It is a lack of drive in people. It's a lack of quality. I see it all the time. I can go on and on.
Yeah, I know. But
even the stuff that's going around here in my apartment complex since it's been bought out.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to go with you about the lack of drive. I know people who are working very hard.
Yeah.
And the structure is not one where they can get where they're getting ahead. So I'm not
going
to go there with
you.
Yeah,
it's not drive. I don't even know what
opportunity.
Opportunity
is the right word, I think.
An opportunity is, but it's. And that there's a lot of these people that are in these positions that they have all this power, but they don't do anything. It's the greed that goes along with it. And it really makes me sad because I see people in my field that don't even care half the time. I don't know. Sometimes I think it's just a thing that's going around. It's like everybody thinks the world's going to end tomorrow, so they don't care.
Well, I'm told it's going to end on May 21st. So
you know, and
we have something to look forward to.
I can't comprehend that. I wasn't made that way, I guess.
So what do we do? I mean, what's your answer to this? What would you have liked to have seen in the speech? What would have made you go, yeah, that's what I wanted out of you?
I think for him to be more realistic and not stand behind all the corporate thugs. Sometimes I think that Obama, and you know what? I had all the hope as everybody else did. When he got elected. But sometimes I wonder, and this might sound sick and sadistic, and yeah, I'm far out there, but sometimes I wonder if he doesn't have a gun to his head in some sort of way.
Yeah, it's called the CEOs saying, do what we want you to do or we're going to create no jobs, and there's going
to
be
or, you know, what happened to JFK and a lot of the other leaders that stood up for their ground. I don't even want to go there.
Yeah, please don't.
You know, no one really ever knows what's going on behind the big scene, especially as simple people. We don't really know what's going on behind the big picture of it all. And to tell you the truth, it's kind of scary if you really use your imagination and think about it. And maybe I'm kind of far out there sometimes in my imagination. And, you know, I try to be logical in all sense of the terms. And when I was a little kid, you know, in the 70s in grade school, you know, and was watching Star Trek and all these futuristic shows and, you know, and reading the books when I was a teenager, I thought, shit, by the time I'm 40, the world is going to be great. It has to be with all this intelligence and education and knowledge out there. But to tell you the truth, I'm kind of disgusted in the way that things have turned out.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
It makes me sad. Yeah. But of all the knowledge and everything, people are more interested in what a celebrity is doing. I mean, you know, I go to work and it's like they're all interested in, you know, what a celebrity is doing.
American Idol or
and not, yeah, and it's like I can't figure it out. It's like of all the stuff that's going on in the world, I think it's a bunch of bull poop that people think that celebrities are more important than what's going on in the world. I can't even wrap my head around it. And, you know, maybe I'm a dork. Maybe I'm too sensitive. Maybe I really care about the humanity of the world. But I can't figure out is these greedy corporate people that all these trillions and billions of dollars saved up, and you know what? They're destroying our world. They're destroying humanity. And what is going to happen, you know, to their legacy of their great grandchildren that who will not even exist if the world keeps going the way it is? I think these people are very sociopath, psychotic people that are ruling the world, and they're greedy, and they can't even comprehend the simple fact of sustainability and true civilization as it was meant to be. I really can't, and I don't even have any kids. I've never been married, but I have nieces and nephews.
And we want to make sure that the future is secure, and there is a future for them.
And
Angela, I can't
understand how these people in power.
I get you.
That own the world can even they are there's something wrong with them.
I agree.
They're sociopaths.
I agree.
They're psychotic. They should go in a mental institution.
Okay.
And that's just my opinion.
All right.
In you know an artistic kind of flow mode, but it is true. If you really stop to think about it,
right.
Be realistic and logical.
Yep, I appreciate the call, Angela. Thanks. I got to take a break here. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. if you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
With pride, always by your side.
Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. For the next couple of nights, tomorrow we're going to do a recorded program. I'm going to talk to some folks from the Center for American Progress, from Free Press about net neutrality. Our good friend Irwin Aronson is going to talk a little bit about the state, because the state of the state has got to be coming up soon here in Pennsylvania. So we'll be bringing you that as well. But tomorrow night will be a recorded program. It's going to be new content. Just we're going to be recording it a little earlier in the day so we can make our way to Washington for the Families USA Conference, which we will be bringing you portions up for the Horn listeners. If you tune into the Horn 9 a.m. to noon, that's going to be where we'll be doing our live program. So you can go to the headonradionetwork.com. We'll put a link on our site at thericksmithshow.com. You can watch it as well. But we'll be 9 a.m. to noon at the Families USA Conference. And Guy James, I guess, will be following us up from noon to 3. Bob Kincaid was supposed to be there, not feeling too well, so he's not going to make it. But we're gonna move on. So on Thursday and Friday nights, we will be bringing you interviews and discussions from the Families USA Conference, talking about healthcare mostly. I mean, this is a big healthcare conference, and it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. We have got a full slate of guests to come and talk about things that are going on. So the Families USA Conference is what we'll be doing on Thursday and Friday. We'll be back live on Monday. So you know, hopefully we'll get back to your calls then. But for the next couple of days, we're going to be doing some recorded stuff. So I just want to make you aware of that because I think it's important. But to wrap this up, again, I don't think there were any real surprises here, Jake. Nothing really at all.
Again, it was a center speech. I think it was calculated. He threw some good things out for the conservatives, good things out for people that kind of in the middle. And there are definitely some good things out for that you and I could agree with. But for the most part, pretty much a center speech designed to, I think, short circuit any criticism from the right and take away some of that support within the ranks of the Republicans out there in the public at the end of the day.
Anyway, if you want to email me your thoughts on this, we're going to probably focus on this a little bit more. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails. Again, you know, I go back to some of it, and, you know, I think the thing that happened in Tucson, the shooting, may have had some influence on this. You know, this idea that, you know, somehow we need to be more conciliatory. We need to, you know, work across party lines. And I think the president's right on one vein, that the Republicans are now going to have to, In order for anything to get done, both Democrats and Republicans are going to have to work together and agree on some things, which puts a lot of pressure, an awful lot of pressure on the Republicans, because they're used to saying no. They're used to being the party of no. And now they're going to have to come up with some ideas. It's one thing to vote in the House because you've got the votes to repeal health care. It's another thing to replace it with common sense.
Well, the irony is the pressure that they're going to be getting from the Tea Party and, you know, the progressives on some issues, ironically, agree. So the mainstream Republicans in Congress are going to kind of be, they're going to be getting pressure from both sides. Be interesting. I actually think on some issues, these Tea Party people who were newly elected could actually be a benefit to us, Rick.
We will see. We will see. You know, the one zinger that came out of this, if you can call it a zinger, was over health care. You know, the one little shot was, you know, well, I've been hearing there's some problems here. Kind of maybe, you know, it's pretty funny. But at the end of the day, these are people who still hate what we've done in the way of health care. And they've, you know, they've done everything they can possibly do to destroy that. You know, he goes and he says, you know, and that's why we passed reform that's finally prevents the health insurance industry from exploiting patients. And again, you know, this is a shot at them repealing the health care law, which I think, you know, wasn't thrilled with, but a step in the right direction.
If you notice, he did throw out kind of an olive branch to the Republicans. I think he mentioned that he'd be willing to talk about some part of the health care reform that has to deal with small business. Was it the paperwork? Something like that to reduce costs. It was basically an olive branch.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the show, you can go to thericksmithshow.com. It will be there. We're going to be taking out the president's speech, so because you can find that anywhere. So the people who download our podcast will just listen to the content we've put out. So we hope everybody enjoyed the show. I think this was an interesting, the first time we've done something like this, dedicated the whole program to one thing. So we'll see what kind of feedback we get. I'm interested to hear what kind of feedback we get from folks on this. Kind of a format change for us, because generally we bang through a lot of stuff. Tonight we focus pretty much here on the president's speech, which I thought was middle of the road. It was, you know, it was vanilla. It was milk toast, pandering. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy's coming to the USA.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.